back in your feeds. It's me and my man G with no sign of the E, and we bleed independent Japanese worldwide wrestling. Yes, indeed, it is Friday once again, and you are live here on the Inside of the Ropes podcast network with the wrestling podcast. That's wrestling spelled WRSTLING. That's all the graps without the E. My name is Liam. This man right here is Gareth.
Hey.
And we welcome you one more time to the wrestling podcast. We've got a hell of a lot to talk about today. Beautiful stuff coming from Ring of Honor and Dramatic Dream Team. Lots of news to get into. Excited for this one, G. So let's just jump right in. Pure title tournament, anyone? Absolute belter from start to finish. G, we watched the finals. What did you make of it?
Nice to have Pure champion again.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Good end to what was a very strong tournament. And I think the right man took home the gold.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's felt like it's been Gresham's to lose the entire time. Jonathan Gresham, that is, the Octopus. He's the guy that instigated this in storyline. He's one of the foremost technical wrestlers on the planet today, and I think he's a fantastic choice for the fresh new ROH Pure Champion.
Yeah, I hope he gets a good long run with this, really reestablish it. I don't see any reason why they won't do that. The next thing is setting up who's going to be the first contender.
Yeah, I think the next thing's really interesting, actually, and we'll get to that. Let's do this one as it went down. So it was a two-match card. We got a sight of what life might look like after the Pure tournament with a six-man tag team match. That was Shane Taylor Promotions, Shane Taylor, Moses Maddox, and Jasper Khan against the debuting EC3 and the multiple time ROH tag team champions Mark and Jay the Briscoes. What did you make of this one?
Interesting sort of seeing EC3 in an ROH ring. Not somebody I would think of as like a kind of classical fit for ROH, but I do think obviously in 2020 it's a long way from, you know, the high watermark days of 2004 to 2006, 2007, you know, so not a bad addition by any stretch. You know, a great talker, he can bring it in the ring, but it's just really easy to fall back on the sort of lazy trope that he's just a body guy. But, you know, I think when motivated, paired with the right person, he can have a very good match.
Yeah, I mean, since you mentioned the body, I'll just go there briefly. I mean, he does have quite a wonderful physique. I couldn't believe the shape he was in. It's astonishing, really.
Yeah, he dwarfs the rest of them, doesn't he, in this match?
He does. I kind of felt in a way that he didn't actually wrestle as much as I was expecting him to.
No.
As kind of the feature person in this match, he was almost booked around a little bit. And I was quite excited for this one, much like I was for his match with Moose at Bound for Glory. And I'm fearful that we're getting off to the wrong foot with EC3. Not that either match that he's been in has been bad, but it's not like he's come out hot. You know, he's lost both of them, albeit he didn't get pinned here. It just seems like a slightly inauspicious start.
He's not come out of these two encounters smelling of roses, has he?
No, which, given all the hype with him coming in, I'm slightly surprised about. But hey, I'm sure they know what they're doing. I'm a massive fan of Shane Taylor, by the way. Have you seen much of him before?
No, that was my first time seeing Shane Taylor, I believe.
I just think he's really cool. He's got a different look in terms of his body shape or what have you. Does really good stuff in the ring. Love that finish as well. It's a bit of a Rikishi driver kind of thing, which is always a winner here on the wrestling podcast. And I quite liked Maddox and Khan as well. Thought they looked decent.
Definitely. It'd be interesting to sort of see if off the back of this, we get a straight tag team match, them versus the Briscoes, perhaps.
Yeah, sounds like a plan. It was interesting to kind of get a glimpse of what the Ring of Honor product may feel like beyond the Pure title tournament. As we said back on episode one, all those weeks ago, you know, this no-fan setting really did play to the strengths of the Pure tournament in so much as it allowed a lot of focus on the action. The production was pretty tight to the moves, and it really did feel quite sporty. You know, it felt a bit like, it wasn't dissimilar actually production-wise to what they've been doing with the UFC in the pandemic era. There was a realism to it, and with all the VTs and the videos, etc. So how that translates to a weekly program without the tournament is going to be quite interesting.
Yeah, it's not going to have that sort of same level of focus. So I hope, you know, they keep a number of the production aspects going forward, writing two matches a week and having sit down interviews with people ahead of the built stuff.
Yeah, I really think that's the way to go. We spoke last week about Bound for Glory and the arena that Impact are using, kind of feeling like a bit of a dead space without any fans or any technology to at least make you feel like there's something there. And I don't want ROH, having made such a strong start in their return, to go down that route.
No, definitely not. But yeah, this first match, it just felt like it went completely against conventional wrestling wisdom by having your hot new guy not win.
Yeah, I didn't quite get it. And like I said, I like Shane Taylor a lot, but it didn't make any sense to me. And not, you know, he didn't win. He wasn't actually involved with the finish at all. Yeah, it seemed like a really odd decision. I'm slightly worried that EC3 may go the way of Tennille Dashwood. Yeah, do you remember when she initially left WWE? She was quite a big name and she would turn up in lots of places but wouldn't stay for any real length of time. And as a result, her contribution seemed to become less and less meaningful with each promotion she turned up in. Now that she's anchored in Impact, I expect that to change. But I'm slightly fearful with this kind of free-roaming free agent status that EC3 appears to have, that he could potentially fall foul of that same issue.
Mm. No one's willing to sort of go all in on him where he's not put pen to paper.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same dilemma that, you know, to a lesser extent, Kota Ibushi had for a long time as well.
Sure. Hopefully he can sort of turn it around.
Yeah, no, for sure.
I guess it's a small sample size, 2 matches. But yeah, we haven't been left super impressed, either of us, so, by his contributions thus far.
No. Okay, going to the main event. It's been spoken about already that we both love Gresham, we love some Octopus, but Hot Sauce Tracy Williams, I'll be the first to admit, is somebody that I haven't enjoyed that much in previous viewings in the likes of Evolve. I can see he's clearly a very proficient wrestler, but he hasn't grabbed me particularly, although that was different here, and that's been a hallmark of this whole tournament. You know, the likes of David Finlay, for example, I hadn't enjoyed particularly before this tournament, but with the extended video packages and a bit more room to breathe, I grew to enjoy him and actually quite enjoyed his contributions to the tournament. Same goes for Tracy Williams here. Really enjoyed his video package, and actually as a whole match, this was fantastic.
I was expecting this one to go a lot longer than it did.
Yeah, agreed.
Not necessarily a bad thing. I don't think match length doesn't equal quality. You know, they're not paired. I think this went about 15 minutes. Just really strong bell to bell. Don't think Tracy Williams lost anything in defeat here. Really strong outing for both men. And yeah, like I think we said at the top of the show, I think the right man took the gold.
Yeah, it feels like this whole thing has been designed quite rightly to put the focus on Gresham as the top tier pure wrestler, and it's up to the rest of the wrestling world to try and unseat him. Be cool if they could get someone like a Zack Sabre Jr. or somebody really hot on that catch style or technical style to come in and have a bit of a long standing rivalry with him. But yeah, good stuff. Intriguing that Williams and Leaf were both part of the foundation stable with Gresham. Mm-hmm. So you wonder if there's going to be some headbutting down the line there.
Yeah, some sort of internal tensions going forward, not least where Lethal and Gresham are co-holders of the tag team titles as well. So lots of room for interesting storytelling with this as well.
Yeah, 100%. So I suppose as far as Ring of Honor is concerned, it's mission accomplished. You know, they didn't have a huge amount of momentum, I would say, kind of going into the pandemic. And as they've come out of it with renewed vigor, I think as a fan, I'm more interested in the product off the back of this tournament. And I am super intrigued to see how they handle weekly television without a tournament going forward.
I think they've got, you know, a second chance to make a good first impression with, I think, the next show, where they don't have the crutch of the tournament now. It's going to be incumbent on them to, I think, deliver a really strong show and keep those new eyeballs or returning eyeballs on the product.
Yep, absolutely.
So I do think it's kind of all to play for them. It's theirs to lose.
Yep, no, I couldn't agree more.
They're in a similar position to what Impact have been in recently, with the renewed sort of interest with all the talents coming back at Slammiversary.
Mm.
You know, they had a really good chance to kind of get these people to stick around, which, you know, if I'm honest, I don't think they've been successful in. I do think that they didn't stick the landing there. Impact, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a really interesting comparison to make, and I suppose they are on a bit of a parallel journey in a way. And you could throw MLW into the mix as well, albeit they probably had more momentum going pre-pandemic, but their weekly TV show comes back in a couple of weeks as well, and it'd be interesting to see how they navigate these waters and what kind of impression they can make. Just going back to Ring of Honor, so they've announced it is, as you speculated, a two-match card for the next week's show. We've got Dak Draper versus Brian Johnson. I'm not familiar with either of those gentlemen. I believe Dak Draper was one of the alternates for the tournament, though. And in the main event, Dalton Castle against Brody King.
Interesting. I like Dalton Castle and Brody King, so that'll be good.
That's got good potential.
I question the wisdom of putting names that people aren't necessarily familiar with in that first match. Again, like I say, you want to kind of capitalize on this renewed thing. Why wouldn't you maybe feature two people that people were familiar with from the tournament,
yeah,
but that hadn't wrestled in the tournament, going, you know, to kind of create a sort of rankings for contenders for the pure title?
Yeah, agreed. And there were a lot of guys that could potentially have been making one-shot appearances that I'd like to see more of them would have been perfect for this spot, you know, like a Wheeler Yuta, Freddie Ahai, Rust Taylor, you know, all of those guys.
If it were me in charge of the decisions, I would have put the people on the losing side of the bracket finals in a match to decide third place in the tournament.
There you go. Yeah.
And they get first crack at the title.
There you go. Yeah, makes perfect sense. Not entirely sure what the status is of the current champion, Roosh. I'm assuming he's based out of Mexico. So it'd be interesting to see if and when he's able to return to defend his title. But for the time being, it could be that the pure title takes its place as the top belt to go for.
Mm. Character-wise, that's what Gresham would want.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, there's always been a bit of historic tension between the world champion and the pure champion, so I'd quite like to see that revisited anyway. But
oh, definitely.
But there we go. Overall, so a very strong tournament indeed. I would argue possibly the best version of No Fans Wrestling that I've seen thus far. Certainly a great effort, and really pleased to see Jonathan Gresham with that title.
And we're back. And in part two here, we're going to be talking about DDT's Ultimate Party Show that happened on Tuesday morning.
DDT, ain't no party like an ultimate party.
So this was a very early start, if you watched it live. So I was up at 5:30 in the AM for this show, UK time. Worth it. I don't think I went to bed till 2 AM, but I was like, there's no way I'm not getting up to watch this live. I'm so pumped for Ultimate Party. So I rolled out of bed at 5:30, threw the kettle on, made a cup of tea, and yeah, dug in. And very glad I am too. Like, it was the right decision.
Yeah.
For me, there's nothing like watching a wrestling show live.
Yeah, it adds something, doesn't it? I'm not sure what, but it really does.
So sitting and watching this live along with the English translation on Twitter, yeah, I had an absolute ball. What did you think, Liam?
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, I didn't watch it live. I watched it subsequently. I really, really enjoyed it. Definitely agree, though. You get something. There's something special about watching it live. I'm not sure I could put my finger on it, but for sure. I love this card. I thought it was really great. As an overall variety show, something for everybody, little bits and bobs here and there. I thought it was great. Some really strong work rate stuff towards the top end of the card. You know, sort of traditional modern work rate, as well as some more slower paced, strong style stuff. Really great. And I loved the general look and feel of the show. It felt like a big show. Like, the stage setting was really good. The fact that they had people there was obviously a massive plus. And it's a good point, actually, if you are missing watching shows with fans on, then head on over to Japan, because they're there. But generally speaking, I just love the aesthetic of the whole thing.
I really noticed when they brought the lights up in the venue during the interval, just how gorgeous the venue they were wrestling in was.
Yeah, it was.
Really, really nice venue.
It reminded me a bit of the old Pride shows, you know, the sort of Japanese equivalent to UFC, with the way they have the stage set up. It was really, yeah, really stunning.
For me, I thought it was a really well built and paced card. A match, like a card of two very distinct halves, which, unlike a lot of cards, is actually demarcated with an interval. An 8-match card, the first four of which were good, but were sillier end of the DDT spectrum.
They were quirky.
Yeah, which is generally how the promotion operates. And then when you came back from the interval, it was just banger after banger after banger.
Bangerang.
I really liked it. Should we go through the stuff that really spoke to us?
Hell yeah. Let's start at the top. You know, first match on the card. Mighty Mao making his return.
What a match.
What a match indeed. Yeah, against Shunma Katsumata. So, so good. I mean, this is a guy that's coming back from injury, and Mao, you would know, he's so fluid in the ring. It's incredible. He's just slick.
Obviously a guy with a huge future ahead of him. You know, not that Katsumata was any slouch.
No, and I like a man with a sort of Lego-based gimmick, which is what he had. And partway through this match, he had this box of Lego with him that got spilled onto the ring. And so every move henceforth was all delivered onto little pieces of Lego, which just had me cringing just based on that one time I stepped on some at a Christmas years and years ago. Just brutal stuff, honestly. Give me thumbtacks any day of the week.
I really like Katsumata's gear.
Yes.
He had Twin Peaks and Shining-inspired gear. Shining's one of my favourite movies.
Very cool. Very cool indeed.
So I appreciated that.
And it's interesting going back to, because we've been very fortunate to have a chance to speak to the likes of Takesta, Mr. Haku, does a lot of the English translation, President Takagi, and, you know, back in the Takesta interview, he mentioned Mao as one of the stars on the rise in DDT, you know, one of the people that he viewed as a potential future opponent for his sort of ace crown, although he was perhaps too modest to call himself that. But I could definitely see what he's talking about here. Mao looks sensational.
He's really one to watch if you're not familiar with DDT.
Yep.
I believe this match is also available for free on YouTube. So we will post this to our socials so people can watch and enjoy for free.
Oh, do. And yeah, let us know what your thoughts are as well. I'd love to hear it.
The next match on the card that really spoke to me was the DDT Extreme Title Weapons Rumble.
And this was a prime example of why, if you don't speak Japanese, you need to watch these shows with the DDT English Twitter open on a separate device. You need this translation, because otherwise you're going to be lost at sea.
Yeah, you'd have no idea, would you?
No.
There's no way to, like, just from context clues, work this out yourself?
No. So in brief, the rules of the Weapon Rumble match is that it's a match where each wrestler has a certain amount of designated weapons that enter the match at particular specific intervals. So you get the Royal Rumble-esque countdown to when to when the next weapon is going to be entered. And it can be absolutely anything from sort of the usual objects and plunder to, you know, like a joke, or in this case, some secrets being revealed. But anyway, let's just as a couple of examples, both men had a wrestler come out on their behalf at one point to assist. There was a weapon that only made a noise. It's a bat, a barbed wire explosion bat, and when somebody was struck with it, a huge explosion sound effect went off, which just killed everybody. And then towards the end of the match, Shinya Aoki, who was the current champion and is also a massive MMA star as well, I like pointing that out, his weapon of choice was a clip shown on the big screen of some of Takagi's secrets being revealed. And this one, as per the translation, was that Takagi saying that there was a hot celebrity in the crowd and she really fancied him and wanted to sleep with him, which everybody in the audience thought was absolute nonsense and was chuckling away at. And then in return, Takagi's next weapon was a video clip of a man interviewing somebody who's allegedly Shinya Aoki's ex-wife, who is revealing some of his innermost secrets. But the final death blow to Aoki was a woman who had revealed that Aoki had been messaging her directly on Instagram and wanted to go to the lovemaking hotel, but she just blocked him.
His DM game is weak.
It's certainly not as strong as his Brazilian jiu-jitsu game, that's for sure. But
and that killed him off dead. You know, like, he was weakened. He was weakened before this. But yeah, that was the final nail in the coffin for Aoki. God.
And this highlights, you know, the variety that you get with DDT. It was so silly, but yet so wonderful. It was a real grin fest.
It's hard to do it justice.
It is.
Just talking about it, I was grinning ear to ear during the whole 10 minutes or so that this ran. A real nice way to finish, like, the first half of the show. Just send you off smiling into the interval. You need the translation to do it justice. And even,
you really do.
Even not knowing exactly what we're saying, just reading the translations had me laughing.
Yeah, it's one that I would encourage you to seek out.
Afterwards as well, we found out that President Takagi's only going to be defending the title now in street wrestling matches, which are all going to be free on YouTube.
A dangerous move indeed, as in our exclusive interview with the man himself on ITRWrestling.com, he did reveal that one of the members of Tokyo Yoshi Pro's roster had threatened to run him down with a car. So I'm glad we got that interview in when we did, because I'm not sure how much longer he's going to be knocking around for.
I think as well, once he starts making those defences on YouTube, we'll be sure to tweet those out to people so you can watch along as well.
Yeah, should be good fun. So for the more work rate oriented fans, there's plenty for you here as well. So as we said, the top three matches, I would say, very much tick that box. The first of which was the DDT Universal title, which was defended by the UK's Chris Brooks, somebody that Gareth and I are big fans of. He was defending against UK UNO, and this was a fantastic, fast-paced, hard-hitting, what I would almost describe as like a modern work rate style match. Is that fair?
Yeah, hell of a match. It seemed like a big test for UNO. Brooks has been pushed pretty heavily so far during his run in DDT, going toe-to-toe with Takeshita, defeating him for the title. Big step up for UNO winning the title here.
I thought he looked really good as well. I think we commented before, last time we were talking about DDT, he's got a sort of essence of Kota Ibushi about him, in his
definitely.
Sort of look and also in his athleticism. And he even performed the old Golden Triangle Moonsault at one point as well, a very similar looking move. My favourite spot of this entire match, and one that we'll probably be able to find a GIF for, was Chris Brooks does a really nice sort of slingshot cutter spot, generally into the ring. This time he waited for UNO to jump out of the ring and hit the same spot there. It looked absolutely brutal. And there was quite a lot of really memorable moments in this match. So again, if you get a chance, I would recommend you seek this one out.
I've struggled to think of the final three matches of any card I've watched this year that stack up against the final three here.
No, yeah, nothing springing to mind. I'm sure there have been competitive cards, but nothing springs to mind. I mean, this was really, really good.
I'm not saying there's not a card with three equally good matches on it elsewhere dotted around, but I just think, you know, running back to back to back like this.
Yep. A fair and valid claim indeed. Moving on, our main man, Takeshita Man, who graced this podcast, friend of the show, he went up against Jun Akiyama, the wrestling legend over in Japan. This was exactly what Takeshita said it was going to be. This was a pure, strong style match.
For me, the whole story of the match is one errant move led to Takeshita's downfall here.
Yeah, for sure.
Shortly into the match, Takeshita went for a... They're out on the floor, and Takeshita goes for a big running knee with Akiyama in front of ring post. Akiyama dodges it, and Takeshita absolutely destroys his own knee against the ring post.
Oh man, it sounded terrible, didn't it?
Absolutely horrible. And then his knee was just not playing ball for the entire rest of the match, and you could argue that that's what cost him the whole match, you know, because the match went for another 20 minutes after that, but
yeah.
He was just never really able to get that consistent string of offense in after that point.
Yeah, and it's interesting, sort of having had the opportunity to speak to him, this one meant an awful lot in terms of proving the worth of the quote-unquote independent style Japanese wrestler against one of the big boys, and Akiyama very much is from the establishment, if you like, in Japan. It was a bit of a gut wrench to see him lose, in fact, and I wonder if it's going to be part of a bigger story where eventually Akiyama, who at this stage looks like a final boss as far as DDT is concerned, eventually gets beat by Takeshita.
He's undefeated, Akiyama, going into the Dio Grand Prix later this month. So it's incumbent on Endo, has now said as champion, he's said that he's the top guy in DDT and Akiyama's got to beat him.
Be careful what you wish for.
There's some big, big matches, singles matches, first time singles matches that are going to come out of that tournament now with Akiyama taking part.
Yeah, so this starts in the next couple of weeks, actually. Follows the same kind of pattern as most of the tournaments that you see in Japan, but gosh, what a stacked lineup. So many good looking, juicy matches in this one, so really, really excited to get involved here. And I'm not tournamented out at all.
I didn't think you were going to say matches then. I thought you were just about to talk about how handsome all the DDT wrestlers were.
Well, you know, I'm sure I don't need to go into that now. But as many of our followers will attest, you know, there's some good-looking men on the DDT roster, that's for sure. One last thing that I really loved about this match was there was a point where Takeshita and Akiyama were exchanging suplexes. Akiyama with the exploders and Takeshita with the Germans. And Takeshita came out on top of that, but as he got to his feet, he sold it, either on purpose or it just happened, as if he'd just been spun around on the spot 10 times and then asked to run in a straight line, like his legs were completely gone. And it looks so legit. I loved that. It really did feel like a proper fight.
I actually went back and rewatched this match just before we came on the air, and just Takeshita's selling of that knee and just selling generally throughout this whole match, I just think is absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
There were so many little times where he would sell the knee, or, you know, would, I think he makes a cover maybe after a powerbomb, and he's got Akiyama stacked, but he takes the bad leg off the ground.
Yeah, he's Okada-esque in that regard.
So impressive. And then the finish here, I thought was interesting in that Akiyama hits, I'd maybe describe it as a high angle exploder, like really gets
wrist clutch.
You know, really gets him. Well, was it a wrist clutch, the last one?
I believe
the sort of final suplex of the match, anyway. You know, like extra nasty, some extra mustard on it, and he goes for the pin, but he pulls him up at two. And then puts him in the front neck lock, which gets him the submission victory.
Yeah, this feels like the start of something rather than the end of something, doesn't it? You know, I feel like there's a big story coming for Takeshita, and I really hope it ends up with a rematch between these two, because I'd quite comfortably watch another one.
So it's very possible we actually see them have a rematch in December. December 27th, I believe, is the final of the Dio Grand Prix.
Okay.
They're in different blocks, Takeshita and Akiyama, so there's every chance it could be those two going one-on-one again to decide the champion.
Oh, does this mean we're going to have to cover more DDT? I mean, oh, if we must.
Oh, gun to my head. How terrible.
Indeed. Yeah, let's jump on this main event as well, because I thought this was an absolute cracker as well. Entirely different type of match to the one we just spoken about. A lot more fast-paced. A lot more flashiness, but again, some great selling, good story told throughout. We're talking about the KOD Openweight title match. Tetsuya Endo, the champion, against his former stablemate, Daisuke Sasaki. Both men were part of the Damnation stable, where Sasaki was unceremoniously kicked out after having tried to unceremoniously kick Endo out, and that failed. So Sasaki was essentially on his own with Endo with the whole crew behind him. This is a big, big schmoz, big story with the whole Damnation stable at ringside. But my word, did these guys go hell for leather. What an incredible match.
A lot of emotion to this one, you know, which, you know, you don't necessarily get heaps of. Elsewhere on the card, there wasn't necessarily like a ton of big emotional matches.
No.
Almost a bit more of a soap opera-y storyline here.
Yeah, definitely.
That gave this match like a real hook. So invested here. So obviously the original plan for this event was it should have been Kenny Omega taking on Endo here.
Oh my God. Could you imagine?
That was the intention anyway. Obviously with the pandemic, they had to put something together. And I think what a good job they did. You know, like I was all in on this.
Yeah.
And not all in the stable.
It's interesting, just as an aside, that you mentioned the original plans for Kenny Omega, because I felt there was a few nods to the cleaner in this one. Endo's gear certainly had a flavour of Omega to it. And also, I believe he went for the one-winged angel at one point as well, which was quite interesting.
As soon as the borders are flung open once again, I don't think it'll be long before we see those two go face-to-face.
Book it, and we will talk about it without question.
So Endo won this one, retaining the title, but we saw a reunion of Sasaki returning to the Damnation Fold post-match, which I thought was really nice as well.
It was, yeah.
With some singing and, yeah, lots going on here post-match.
But I suppose the bottom line is Damnation is back together. And I also want to give a brief shout-out to just how jack-city Endo is as well. I mean, we talked about EC3 earlier, but Jesus Christ, you could basically see every muscle in this man's body. It was all there for show. It was like a year 7 science project. I mean, he's ripped to shreds. He must be in the minus figures for body fat. It's ridiculous scenes.
If any of you follow Endo on Twitter, he loves getting his butt out on there, or certainly has done recently. I just started following him like today and was just like scrolling through his feed. And for the Ultimate Party poster, it's him with his butt out with a Damnation sign. And then further down from that, there's a bunch of pictures of what appear to be him on a tanning bed. Just his whole bum.
So just the usual pro wrestler Twitter feed then, basically.
There's no body fat on his butt either.
Yeah, he's like Taguchi, but living the gimmick full time.
Oh man, Taguchi would be unstoppable if he had a butt that was just pure muscle like that.
I want to see these guys as a tag team. I think Taguchi could coach Endo to kill everybody with his ass.
There we go.
I also wanted to just pay tribute as well. I don't know if you picked up on this. There was a slight recreation of the whole Shawn Michaels, Ric Flair, sorry, I love you superkick thing here, where just prior to Endo hitting his just beautiful shooting star press to finish the match, he gave Sasaki a little hug just to say, hey, mate, about to kill you. But yeah, wonderful stuff. And I also want to say, what a wonderful name that Endo's picked out for his version of the Spanish Fly. He calls it Tetsuya in the Sky, almost exclusively for the acronym.
Another little thing I liked about the end of the show here, they had like an end credits and music.
Yes.
And then just a wonderful little closing shot of Sasaki and Endo walking down a corridor and turning a corner with the giant novelty check and fighting over it. You don't see wrestling shows with an end credits and like a little end sting like that. Yeah. And I just thought, that really just was the cherry on top of the cake for me. You know, like it was such a good show. And then just that lovely extra little touch just put it over the edge for me, I think. Yeah,
absolutely. A really worthwhile watch. I thoroughly enjoyed this show. I would recommend it to anybody that hasn't watched DDT before or anybody that's just looking for something a bit different. You're going to find something of everything on this, and you'll have a good time doing it.
I found it such a breeze to sit through. Nearly a 5-hour show, I think.
Mm-hmm.
For both of us, you know, we struggle to sit through long, long wrestling shows. We'll usually like hit pause. But for this, I found it a breeze to get through. And so by the end, I was like, Jesus, that was 5 hours.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I watched a 5-hour show straight through, but I did with this one. And it felt like I was watching it whilst sitting in the back of a wonderful sleek sports car with the roof down, driving along a country meadow with the wind blowing through my hair and the sun shining on my face.
What?
It was a good show. I enjoyed it.
All right. We'll be back after the news.
Back with some news. Few bits and bobs to get through here, so let's start off with some challenging news that All Japan Pro Wrestling star Zeus has tested positive for COVID-19. Zeus is going to remain isolated in a hotel in Osaka until November 11th. We wish Zeus all the best. Hope he recovers well and is back in a ring very, very soon.
Over in New Japan, few bits and pieces. A stipulation has been added to the upcoming Zack Sabre Jr. and Toru Yano match for the King of Pro Wrestling trophy, which is going to be a no corner pad match.
Ah, okay. Interesting.
Obviously plays into Yano's strength.
Excellent. Okay. Well, that was already an interesting match.
In further tournament season news, the participants have been announced for the Best of the Super Juniors, which is going to be a little bit unusual this year, obviously, as it's running concurrently with the World Tag League. It's only going to be 10 people, and it's only going to be one block. Everyone will obviously fight everyone, and then the top two points holders will face off once again on December the 11th to determine the Best of Super Juniors this year.
Yep. Okay.
So participants are Taguchi, Master Wato, Sho, Robbie Eagles, Hiromu, Bushi, El Desperado, Yoshinobu Kanemaru, Doki, and Taiji Ishimori, who is the current junior heavyweight champion.
Okay.
As well as that, we've also had word that there's going to be the Super J Cup 2020 returning over in the States. So that's only going to be 8 participants. We're going to see TJP, ACH, Leo Rush, Chris Bay out of Impact, Ray Horace from ROH, Blake Christian from Game Changer Wrestling, Clark Connors from the LA Dojo, and El Fantasmo participate. In last year's tournament, El Fantasmo beat Dragon Lee to win the thing, so he's looking to repeat that victory. So it's an odd one having the two tournaments running, you know, in different bits of the world like this. I think it would have been really interesting to have run this as the A and the B block of Best of Super Juniors.
Yes.
And you have the winner of each block meet at Wrestle Kingdom to decide the finalist.
Yeah, I think that's a great shout and would have been far more coherent, because I do wonder if that's where they're heading anyway. I do think the winner of the Best of Super Juniors and the winner of the Super J Cup may well face off on night one of Wrestle Kingdom, with the winner wrestling the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion on night two. So I think what you've suggested just kind of smooths it out a little bit.
It seems a little bit more prestigious, and also immediately makes the American side of the block more interesting.
Yeah, it means something, doesn't it?
Yeah, so that's what I think, you know, we would like to have seen, but New Japan's going to New Japan. they do things their own way.
They do. Okay, back over in the States, Major League Wrestling is coming back, which is really good news. I'm a big fan of their product. The restart, as they call it, is November 18th. The weekly television show Fusion is coming back to screens. All the usual suspects, but actually, more interestingly perhaps, MLW have made a spate of signings across the summer. Most recently, Leo Rush has been added to the roster, ACH. Also, Calvin Tankman, somebody that we've spoken about before on the podcast, is very good indeed. Laredo Kid from AAA. And La Parca Jr. as well. So quite a lot of interesting signings there, and I'm not entirely sure that they're done. I suspect there may be a few more before the restart actually takes place. Really looking forward to having that back on our screens, and I'm sure we'll be discussing it on this here podcast.
And then over in Impact, quite a bit of news there. They've announced another Impact Plus special, Turning Point, which is taking place later this month. So the card for that shaping up. World champion Rich Swann's going to defend against Sami Callihan.
That sounds decent.
The Knockouts champion Sue Young will be defending against Yana Perrazzo in an Anything Goes match.
Great.
Which should be real good.
Yeah.
And then the North are defending their newly won tag titles against the Good Brothers.
Interesting.
So those are the three big title matches. Still waiting to see if there's going to be an X Division title match added to the card. But elsewhere on the card, we're going to see Moose taking on Willie Mack. And Brian Myers taking on Swoggle.
Yeah, interested to see Moose and Mac, particularly after what went down at Bound for Glory involving Moose. So that sounds like it'd be quite a good one. Myers and Swoggle. Yeah. What else we got?
In sad news, Kylie Rae's announced that she's no longer a professional wrestler.
Oh, this is so sad.
After missing Bound for Glory last month, she'd issued an apology via her Patreon and stating that she was unwell and apologising to her members, her subscribers on there. Really sad. Not our place to kind of speculate, obviously, what's going on, but just, you know, we're very sad to lose such a talented performer for any reason.
Yep, and very much wish her well. back to DDT, as we mentioned during the second part of the show, the Dio Grand Prix 2021, despite being held in 2020. That's how it goes, folks. It looks bloody good, if I do say so myself. So we'll just give you a quick rundown of the participants. So A Block contains friend of the show Takesta, Harashima, Daisuke Sasaki, Sakaguchi, Akito, Mao, and Chris Brooks. B Block features current champion Tetsuya Endo, Higuchi, Soma Takao, Oishi, Yuki Ueno, Shumna Katsuma, and Jun Akiyama. Apologies for all the names that I have just slaughtered. But regardless, this looks like a killer tournament, and I do encourage you to give it a check. Should be a lot of fun. So, next week, what have we got next week? Well, exciting stuff indeed. If you joined us for last week's episode, and thank you if you did, our wonderful interview with the fantastic Maki Ito of Tokyo Yoshi Pro, Wrestle Princess is the event that is upon us. It's going down over the weekend, and we will in fact be talking about it next week. Great card indeed. Up in the main event, if you have seen a bit of AEW, you may well have seen Yuka Sakazaki, who is defending her Princess of Princess Championship against Mizuki, who's also fantastic as well. You've got the finals of the International Princess Championship Tournament, which promises to be great. And of course, our good friend Maki Ito, or Ito-chan, teaming up with Sari against Mayu Yamashita and Aja Morong-Kong. Jeepers, this is going to be insane, but it does not stop there. No, no, no. Because Game Changer Wrestling have a glorious double bill going down this weekend with so much fun. And of course, the NGI being the Nick Gage Invitational, the annual hardcore deathmatch style tournament. Looking forward to covering these polar opposite ends of the spectrum all in one neat, tidy, delicate podcast for you next week. And so that, I think, about wraps us up for yet another episode of the Wrestling Podcast. Thanks again so much for spending your time with us. We really do hope you've enjoyed it. You can find us on the socials at Wrestling Pod. That's Wrestling Without the E. We are on Twitter and Instagram. Do come have a chat with us. Also, if you want to send us an email, we're old-fashioned like that, so you can do WrestlingPod, again, WrestlingAboutTheE@gmail.com. Tell us what we should be watching. We want to know, we want to hear your thoughts, so please do get in touch. We do take it very seriously, and if you do request something, the likelihood is we're going to get to it. Other than that, please do keep an eye out for Inside the Ropes on Twitter and ITRWrestling.com. Gareth and myself are often posting news, articles, and interviews in the Japan and the elsewhere sections, and in fact on the columns, the weekly Fave 5, which I am pleased to partake in, is going to be blessed with Gareth's presence. Two members of the Wrestling Podcast up on the Fave 5 this coming week. We're going to be taking down the establishment brick by brick, match by match, and selecting our favorite matches of the week. So do pop along, have a look at what we picked, and cast your vote in the poll below. And I think that pretty much does us for this week. So thanks so much once again. And until next time, stay safe, stay happy, and enjoy the grabs.